Now time for the wrap-up by Brother Jason.
Good morning again. So how are you doing after those discussion groups? Pretty good? Yeah, they were good. I enjoyed listening, hearing what you all had to say. So to start, let's see. Let me just give you a heads up as to what we're going to talk about. The first thing that I wanted to go over is this idea of not becoming enslaved to your lifestyle. So that's the first thing. Let's talk about some connections between Revelation 15 and 16. Thought those were cool. About idols, and then we'll finish talking about the plagues and their relation to Passover. This will be a little bit of a prep for tomorrow. So, enslaved to your lifestyle. Did any of you guys find that you had anything really helpful, any points that really resonated with you in regard to not being a slave to your lifestyle? All right. Well, a couple of things that were brought out. One that I thought was interesting, and it reminded me of something else I had heard before, is this idea of, well, first of all, just kind of making it a habit. You know, this is what our family does. We go to memorial service on Sunday, we go to Bible class on Wednesday, and that is what we do. That just doesn't change, right? So that's one thought. The other thing is one person actually mentioned that in their job interview, actually multiple people said this, in their job interview, they made it very clear, hey, I'd love to work for you, I'm not available on Wednesday nights, and I'm not available on Sundays. And sometimes that even leads to interesting discussions. There's a brother back home who went to work for a company, and he went into the interview, and this is what he did. This is like one of my favorite stories ever. He walked up, there was a whiteboard in the room, and he got up out of his chair, and the guy interviewing was like, what's this guy doing? And he was the president of the company, by the way. So he's at an interview with the president of the company, and this brother gets up out of his chair, he goes to the whiteboard, and he writes, God, at the top. Then after that, he writes, Ecclesia, which probably led to an interesting discussion as to what Ecclesia means, right? Ecclesia, then he wrote, family, then all the way at the bottom, he wrote, work. And then he said, if I work for you, that's what my life's going to be like. And ready for this? He did that. He got the job, and the president of the company is now a brother. How awesome is that? So there you go. So I just thought that was pretty neat, right? But that is principle and not results, you know? And amazingly, the results that he wanted actually came from that. So that's one kind of thought. Another thing just in relation to not being enslaved by your job, I think is the thought of, you know, take every thought captive to the mind of Christ. Everything you do, reverse it. You know, it's not that we have to be slaves to our job. Make your job a slave to your ecclesial life, right? When you are choosing a career, think, what career can I choose that is the absolute best career for being a Christadelphian? And go into that. You know, I mean, I do a lot in history, right? I'm a historian. And so, like, for me, that was a big deal because it allows me to focus on kind of the backbone of Revelation, you know? So it's a useful thing for the ecclesia. Same thing with teaching. You know, you get to spend your time learning how to make classes, write lesson plans. It's all very applicable. So, you know, sit down and think, how can I make my career a Christadelphian career, right? So that's one thought there. Now, moving on to the next one, Revelation 15 and 16. What are some connections you found there? Revelation 15 and 16. Harkenings back to the Exodus. Yeah, Alex?
About the frogs being everywhere.
So frogs everywhere, yes. Yeah, there's like a ton, right?
Devils working miracles.
Spirits of devils, yep, working miracles. So that, and the false prophet, that's like the magicians.
Rivers and fountains of blood.
There's a ton, right? One that I thought was kind of interesting that was brought up is, blessed is he that keeps his garments and watcheth, right? That's like Passover. They're supposed to be ready, watching, with their loins girded. Similar kind of thing. If you just sit down and go through those two chapters, you'll see that there are a ton of Exodus connections. And in fact, the whole book of Exodus. Exodus 12 is another one, where the woman goes out and flees to the wilderness. She's given the wings of an eagle. There's just a lot of links between the book of Revelation to Exodus. the question is, if we see the plagues in our more or less modern history today, what does that mean? What's the purpose of that? Right? Prophecy is not without meaning. It's not just to be like, wow, that's cool. Did any of you come up with what does it mean for us?
Prepare now for the deliverance to come.
You prepare now for the deliverance to come. So just like the children of Israel were delivered from Egypt, deliverance is going to come. Be ready now. Are you one of those Israelite households that's hybrid worshiping? Here's another thing that I think is interesting. If you think about Egypt and the way in which Egypt enslaved the Israelites and really, you know, got into their lives, well, just consider who is Egypt in Revelation 16. So kind of put that together. Revelation 16 is a picture of Catholic Europe, right? These plagues are being poured out upon the Catholic Church, starting with the French Revolution. And so it makes an extremely clear link for us that God views modern-day Egypt is the church. It is the apostasy. And so, you know, sometimes we have these thoughts of, oh, you know, I'm dealing with this issue, oh, lust. Why don't I just go to the Christian bookstore and, like, pick up a book about lust and they'll tell me what to do. That's like going to Egypt and being like, hey, Egypt, how would you fix this problem? You know, and Egypt's going to give you Egyptian solutions, right? It's not, you know, you might find it's helpful, like, a little bit in the short run, but in the long run, you are leading yourself down a path that is not necessarily where you want to go. So, I mean, just think about that, right? This is God, you know, we're very clear that first principles are important, but I think sometimes we don't draw the distinction between we are Israel, they are Egypt, and that distinction needs to be clear. So keep that in mind. Okay, so that's one thing. Now, moving on to idols. All right. Just one thing I wanted to say about idols. Sometimes you might be tempted to have a hobby. Now, I want to be very clear. I want to define my terms here. A hobby, by the definition we are using right now, is, oh, I have free time. What kind of fun thing can I do to occupy my time? Right? That's what I mean by a hobby. So, like, for me, I found cars to be really interesting, right? So, if I didn't stop myself, I would sit online, you know, for hours every day and look at Auto Trader, right? For no reason, I'm not going to buy a car, right? I just think, wow, these are cool, you know? And I don't do that, but I think that's what I would be doing if I didn't prevent myself from doing it. And I think we sometimes have these things that are hobbies where we say, oh, you know, there's nothing actually bad about it. The problem is that what could you be doing instead of that? So I found this is why I learned Hebrew, right? I had to say, okay, what else can I do? What kind of like ecclesial hobby can I have? A hobby that actually relates to the truth. And so I said, okay, well, let's try learning Hebrew. So whenever there was that urge, like, oh, I wonder what car this car is selling for. No, Hebrew, right? And so, you know, that was at least how I did it for me. So just, you know, take every thought captive to the mind of Christ, right? Ask yourself, how does what I'm doing now relate in any way to the ecclesia, right? Maybe you are playing sports with another ecclesial member. You know, I think that's fine. But if you're going out just like going to the local gym and playing volleyball just because you think it's cool, well, like, you know, think about that, right? So there's just various things to ask yourself. What's my motivation? How is what I'm doing right now serving the ecclesia? That's just something a little bit on idols. Here's the final thing. Passover and the plagues. I don't know if you noticed this, but God puts together in the plagues a very interesting set of events which forces the Egyptians to do something that we would not expect. Come to Exodus chapter 9. So he constantly says, his refrain is, "And you shall know that I am Yahweh." He keeps saying that to the Egyptians. And in fact, he sets up this system of plagues so that if the Egyptians want to find any kind of salvation, they must turn to him. So consider this. Exodus chapter 9. We are now going through the plague of the murrain. Take a look at verse 3 and notice there is a certain animal there that's going to be very important in the next few chapters. Exodus chapter 9 and verse 3 says, "Behold, the hand of the Lord is upon thy cattle which is in the field, and upon the horses, upon the asses, upon the camels, upon the oxen, upon the sheep. There shall be a very grievous murrain." Did you notice the particular kind of animal that died that is very important in the next few chapters? The sheep. He specifically says the sheep in Egypt are going to die. Keep that in mind. Verse 6, it happens. Verse 6 says, "And the Lord did that thing on the morrow, and all the cattle of Egypt died. The cattle of the children of Israel died not one." So there's this separation here. They all die in Egypt. Verse 9, notice what happens next. The next plague after the murrain of beasts is, do you remember? Boils, that's right. Next plague is boils. And consider what then happens to our dear little sheep. Verse 9 says, "And it shall become small dust in all the land of Egypt, and shall be a boil breaking forth with blains upon man and upon beast." So this was not just, you know, all the people had these big sores, but the few sheep that survived in Egypt, they suddenly, you know, erupted with these boils, right? So these poor sheep are just walking around covered in boils. Okay, so there's the sheep, right? Now, skip forward to verse 18. Here's the final connection to our sheep. Verse 18, this is now the next plague, the plague of hail. "Behold, tomorrow about this time I will cause it to rain a very grievous hail, such as hath not been in Egypt since the foundation thereof, even until now. Send therefore now, and gather thy cattle and all that thou hast in the field, for upon every man and beast which shall be found in the field, and shall not be brought home, the hail shall come down upon them, and they shall die." So, if you were a sheep in Egypt, right? I hope that's not, you know, degrading. But, if you were a sheep in Egypt, right? The murrain of beasts would happen. You would probably die. Sorry. Then, if you amazingly survived the plague of the murrain, then it was the plague of hail. Then it was the plague of boils. So you got all ugly, right? And you had blemishes. If you survived that, then you got hit with hail, right? So all of the sheep in Egypt were either dead, blemished, or maimed because they were hit with hail, right? Okay, now, consider that, right? God comes along in Exodus chapter 12, and he says to Moses, "I want you to take a sheep, and it must be without blemish." The only place where you could find a sheep like that was in the camp of Israel. Now, we know that there were those in Egypt who feared God. And, you know, they bring their animals under so that they don't get hit with the hail and all of that. But there must have been some Egyptians, a mixed multitude comes out with them, right? There must have been some Egyptians who said, I have to follow this instruction. You know, I don't want my firstborn to die, so that's what I'm going to do. And so they went out and they said, "Sheep! Blemish!" Right? And you know, they went to their neighbor, "Do you have any good..." "No, you know, my sheep, it looks like this," right? Or, you know, whatever. I don't think we can have that one. And and they go around to all the Egyptians and they realize there are no sheep we can use. The only place that I can find an unblemished sheep is in the camp of Israel. I just think that's awesome. That is how God sets this up. But it's not just that. Remember, at Passover, they were supposed to roast the sheep and they would eat it with something. Do you remember what it was? Bitter herbs. Now, look at this. Exodus 9, verse 22. The plague of hail did not just hit the beasts, but it also happened to hit the things that were in the field. Exodus 9 and verse 22 says, "And the Lord said unto Moses, stretch forth thine hand towards heaven, that there may be hail in all the land of Egypt, upon man, upon beast, upon every herb of the field." Ah, interesting. Not only that, though. So the herbs were crushed by the hail. Guess what happened to those tough herbs that managed to survive? Exodus chapter 10 and verse 12. Exodus 10 and verse 12, well, this is now the next plague. Exodus 10 verse 12 says, "And the Lord said unto Moses, stretch out thine hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts, that they may come up upon the land of Egypt," and here's what they're going to do, "and eat every herb of the land, all that the hail hath left." And so verse 15, it describes the locusts. Verse 15 says, "For they covered the face of the whole earth, so that the land was darkened. They did eat every herb of the land, and all the fruit of the trees which the hail had left. There remained not any green thing in the trees or in the herbs of the field through all the land of Egypt." So, they go on their lamb search. They finally get one in the camp of Israel. They come back, bitter herbs, right? They walk outside, everything's all like dead and all like bent up and withered. Ah, no herbs, you know? And they go around looking for herbs and they realize the only place we can find herbs is in the camp of Israel, right? So this is how God specifically sets it up. Now, I think that this is amazing, that God has his principles and those principles do not change. If you desire salvation, the Lord Jesus Christ says, "For salvation is of the Jews." And so it is, you must go to the camp of Israel. You must become a child of Abraham. And in doing so, you then can enter God's family and find that salvation.